we're rapidly heading towards wine, but we need to open this up now for questions and comments. This is being live streamed as well, so we'll run across with some microphones towards the front, please, Vicky, if possible. If we can see some hurtling, we'll try and direct you in different directions. If you can come towards the front, please. Thank you very much. So questions and comments. It's this gentleman at the front, please. Do you want to just say who you are as you ask your question?
Yes, Adrian Oldner, retired. It was just a conversation I had a couple of years ago with one of the creators of Good Games, David Braben from Frontier. And he employs PhD physicists and mathematicians and teaches them to program. So I think we ought to remember that quite a lot of the stuff that makes things work does depend upon some pretty hard-edged understanding of engineering and technology and mathematics, science. The good thing is that if kids come to realize, in order to make somebody fall over realistically, they've got to learn a bit, we might actually make the learning of maths and science better. Mm.
Another
Adrian Smith, part-time entrepreneur, always trying to start things up, but also the hat that I've got on at the moment is for the Teacher Development Trust, which probably illustrates the direction I'm going to head in. So two themes, really. The first is about who should be doing coding and the breadth of it, and I have a passionate view that coding should be everywhere in the school curriculum. When we start talking about where coding is, we tend to talk about the creative side of it, or we talk about computer science, but we forget that actually coding as part of the humanities or anywhere in the curriculum can aid understanding. It goes back to the comment right at the start that making something aids understanding. And one of the things that we're missing in this country is a belief that actually everybody, everywhere in school should be doing some coding. Some digital making. That's the first comment. Second comment, really, which is, I think, the most important one, picks up on some of the things Miles said, which is it's actually all about changing the way teachers behave and the way teachers teach. And we're only going to get sustainable change here if we fundamentally transform professional development for teachers and actually make teaching a more socially collaborative endeavour. And start looking at things like collaborative inquiry as the way to develop teachers, not send them off on coding courses. Unless we do those things in a sustained way, what we'll end up with is pockets of excellence and activity. And CAS is an excellent example of that. It's a good network, but it's a network in pockets of the country. We need some sort of national initiative, which we're trying in the Teacher Development Trust to do. And to fundamentally transform how teaching happens. Because regardless of where it starts, it's the way teaching occurs that's going to make the fundamental changes. That was longer than I meant.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Yeah, I think we have to have two responses. I think it's aimed at Miles.
Okay. There's a contradiction. Well, is it a contradiction? I don't know. Let's have computational thinking, let's have coding across the curriculum. That's easier to achieve in primary school than it is in secondary school. But then, how are you going to get all of the secondary school teachers able to teach that or able to facilitate learning in that? That's a real challenge. It's not a solution, but it's a thought to put on this particular fridge door, which is, if we think that learning through making works for children and for those who are acquiring the skills, and let's do that too for the teachers. So please don't send them on the Python programming course, but let them build stuff using Python. Or, well, maybe not start with Python, but let them build stuff for the web. Let them build stuff in Scratch. I can code up a really nice drill and practice maths game. Problems with that we know in Scratch, or I can teach somebody to do that in relatively few minutes' time. And producing digital, again, long and noble tradition in the primary phase of teachers making things for their children to use in class. Let's just translate that into a digital domain and have them making interactive resources and games.
Yeah. I mean, I was just going to add that I think it's incredibly important, and you know, the capacity, the confidence, and the sharing of knowledge for teachers is important. I think a DfE potentially needs to kind of step up to the plate in terms of CPD and retraining. But also there's a big job for industry to do. You know, and there's a big incentive now with the £6 million skills pot across animation, high-end TV, and games. that was announced last year as part of the tax relief, tax credits that games industry and animation, high-end TV are going to get this year, which is fantastic. And that means that, you know, lots of schemes and initiatives like internships, coaching, reverse mentoring, after-school clubs, you know, helping to support things like the Video Games Ambassadors scheme that we run, which is getting industry professionals into schools and helping to build the capacity and the confidence and the knowledge, is incredibly important. Industry can do so much when it actually does focus on the job that needs to be done. So I think that is the next stage. And certainly in the games industry, that's, you know, well on the way.
Do you have a comment?
I just wanted to add that I think sometimes underpinning this discussion is an assumption about... No, it's a hidden debate about whether this is really about the production of elites. Okay, is this really a discussion about the production of a minority, highly skilled workforce? Picking up on some of the things that Joe was indicating, although I would also suggest that if that's the case, then we've also got to take into account the kind of global workforce, which is competing for the kind of work that we're talking about. But is some of the discussion around kind of coding really about the production of a small segment of highly skilled coders in that kind of way? And I think that's what underpins some of the recent conservative kind of educational policy. But if that's the case, then we need to be kind of honest about that and transparent about that, and we need to find ways of kind of situating that within the ways in which we normally talk about education, which is around equality and opportunity and the sort of more democratic and open senses. So I think some of these debates, there are hidden assumptions there which need to be kind of teased out, because it's not always been the case that the purpose of an education system is the production of sectors of the labor force. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's not normally where we have schools in this country on the whole, but we all seem to buy into this because it suits us for a variety of reasons. If we go down that route, there are going to be some consequences.
I think that's interesting. One of the, in fact, three of the reasons we talk about the importance of digital making, one of which is around the economic. One around personal creativity, and the third that we often talk about, especially at Nominec Trust, is around the ability to participate within socio-technological structures. Those three things come together. Learning to become a digital maker helps you interact across all those three. So how important is that debate there?
It's an important debate. It's not something... I mean, I haven't come across... People have helped me out here. I haven't really come across a lot of the literature or the work which kind of explores it in that kind of way, but I think we're being... bounced into a discussion around the production, you know, which is about the purposes of education, an emphasis on the production of segments of the population as particular purpose, parts of the labor force, and not other kind of more democratic arguments. So I think we need to be careful about that as we kind of enter into that discussion, but that's a bit clumsy.
Any other questions or comments? Of course. Tony. No conference is complete.
Thank you. Tony Parkin, as you might have gathered by the laughter. I was interested in Miles' 20% Google time point, because according to government, of course, we only have 60% of curriculum time formally prescribed. Therefore, theoretically, we have 40% Google time rather than 20% Google time.
20%.
And we know that that's rubbish. I just wanted to point that out. But it seems to me, since the in secondary particularly, since it's always the assessment tail that wags the curriculum dog, is not a simple answer to this to actually come up with an absolutely bloody brilliant assessment routine for secondary education in the area of digital making, which will be so powerful that it would be really hard to resist it. So in other words, instead of trying to do it, I normally would go for the bottom up, the teacher education, all that, done that for 25 years, kept me happily employed. But realistically, if we were to come up with a really good exam, would not that... do a lot to achieve what you're trying to do in a much shorter space of time?
That's a fascinating comment. I'd love to hear some responses from the audience as well as from the panel. Drew.
Hello, I'm Drew Buddy. I'm a teacher. I'm a head of IT at a girls' school. And backing up what Tony said, you know, I'm currently teaching A-level ICT, and anyone who's heard me speak before knows that what I'm about to say, which is that the coursework, my A-level, which is 17-year-old students is having to make for the Welsh Board coursework, is a 6-slide PowerPoint slideshow, 2-document mail merge with 6 six people's details in a database, excuse me, in an eight-page publisher document. And to my you know, I bring copies of that around because people don't believe me. That is such a shocking thing that, you know, there's no creativity in my A-level classes. So the exam boards that come up with that NAF course are largely to blame. When, you know, when a lot of teachers or ICT in schools is getting knocked, in my belief, that's where the problem has lain. And my GCSE class, the ruination of that is this controlled assessment. So now I've got, in the GCSE OCR course, I've got 20 hours in which my pupils have got to make, say, a website or a PowerPoint presentation or something. But the number of marks they get for making the thing is about 4 out of 60 marks. All the other 50-odd marks is writing about how they made it and the print screens that show all the steps they took to make it. That, in my opinion, is where the fault lies. And until that is cracked, whatever dreams anybody has about it being a fantastic world for creating and digital making, I have no chance of succeeding as long as exam boards have courses like that.
Well, I think this is absolutely shocking, and I think this does require leadership as well, you know, from schools, but from MPs and from, you know, the whole body of people who actually do, you know, they do, well, you know, they do, you know, when we talk to them about the problem of skills and the problem with the assessments, then, you know, they do understand and they are keen to do something about it, but it does require leadership from somewhere, and that's what I sense we don't really have.
Okay, all the questions are coming just as we're running out of time. So we're going to have a really quick fire, 1, 2, 3, 4 questions, and then we'll try and take the discussion to the bar, I think. Mm. Can we start at the back and work on a triangle or a straight line, whatever that is?
Hi, I just wanted to ask a question about kind of what you do for digital making for the young people that have already left education, but, you know, they're commonly referred to NEETs, because one of my concerns is from a youth and social worker perspective, you've got incredible people who love to work with young people, but they don't have the skills themselves, they don't know how to get them. Say for myself, like, my background is youth kind of development, but I don't know how to code. I'd rather that I did know how to code, because sometimes you can't get what you need and you never get the financial resource. So I feel like there needs to be not just in education, but training on the social and youth work, and just wondered what ideas you had, because we want to help, we're creative, but we don't have the skills to deliver. Thank you.
Fantastic. The next question. So Joe, I think that's a question for you around industry, actually.
What role you... Hello, actually, Joe, this is a response to what you were saying. Now, my fear is, with the Nesta report that just came out 2 years ago, the politicians have just got on the computer science programming bandwagon. And when we put the new curriculum through, it was a lot more creative than the one that's popped out the other end. And I'm really heartened to hear that you guys are looking at animation and other things in your next step in what you're doing with Yuki. Is that correct in what you're saying? And maybe if you get their ear for that too, then we'll get a more balanced curriculum.
Yeah, I mean, we always started off the Next Gen Skills campaign off the back of the Nesta report with a whole set of recommendations. Only 1 to 4 have been done, which was actually, so we consider ourselves almost like a pre-alpha stage in game-making terms, which is, okay, we're starting to look at the curriculum and in a formal way, and that's not us, by the way, that's just the coalition, the campaign of industry. The next stage is much more detailed than that, you know, and it is about these mix of skills. It's exactly what we've been talking about in terms of how people are inspired and learning collaboratively. So it has to be around creative skills, artistic skills. You know, the report was co-authored by Alex Hope from the special effects industry. So it's all, you know, we're very closely tied with that in terms of the skills asked. But it's absolute critical importance those mix of skills are in every kid's grasp. And I think particularly the point about NEETs is extremely important. You know, as part of that Next Gen Skills report, the kids were asked, I think it was to do with the Games Britannia workshops that run up in Sheffield, but asking a whole bunch of kids about their favorite games and where they were made, like Batman Lego, Batman Arkham City, Grand Theft Auto, though they shouldn't be playing that, then they're under 18. But they all thought that they were made in America, they thought they were made in Japan. And likewise, you know, I think I was at Digital Shoreditch last year, and, you know, you have all these kids on the doorstep of these most creative technical industries technology-driven industries with so many career options open for them, and they have no idea about them. You know, and the careers advice at schools, you know, the careers careers advisors are, you know, the career pathways and the knowledge about these opportunities, particularly in lower socioeconomic areas, is appallingly bad. And that really needs to be fixed.
And I think I need to chat to you after this.
Fantastic. And I think, was there one over here? Yes. Then we'll end up at the top.
Hi, Octavia Hurst. I just wanted to reiterate that I do think this is a pedagogical problem more than anything else, because you mentioned people creating poetry and music, but that pretty much doesn't happen after primary school. What they do is analyse poetry and music. And I think that unless they can be given the opportunity of creating and creating digital things, there's really no point in even having the discussion, because they'll just be analysing something. And that's not really what we're talking about here. So, yeah.
Fantastic, thank you. Final point, Debbie.
I think I'd just add a comment, and it's not necessarily even, Tony and I know each other a lot, and we rarely disagree, but we sometimes occupy similar spaces. I think it's the two-prong, and I think it's what I think the Nominate Trust does, because it is about persevering both in the practice and the theory. And so in the same way that I live in hope and think we should be looking for new assessment models and leadership from our politicians, et cetera, the time it will take to accept that we will be able to assess things that recognize what you've been talking about, which is the collaborative and failing as well as succeeding, and the creativity and creation as well as the analytical, means that what you've said, I think, in your report, that it starts from that innovative extracurricular space that we're working alongside. And I do think there is a will for teachers that do want to be part of that collaborative creative movement. And I think it's linking into what you're saying with the ambassador movement. What we're finding, I work in Apps for Good, and while we're putting people in teams and letting the students begin to collaborate and create their own solutions, which they want to do and they will do with or without us, we can also, teachers do want to learn, but how can they possibly keep up with a field that the experts struggle to understand? And that is where I think we start throwing open the doors of the classroom. Mm. And we have our experts in working with the students directly while the teachers learn while that's happening. And so I think it sounds daunting, but I think it's exciting, because what we have within it is a model that's transformational for education, full stop, not just what's happening within the field.
Sure, that's such a wonderful call to action. We're going to have to end there, but we'll pick up further questions and comments in the bar in a minute. That, for me, that's a really exciting end point, because it's full of possibility plus realism. That there's a wonderful sense of kind of slight dissatisfaction with the way things are going, but real opportunity to do something about this. That there's so much kind of energy around digital making at the moment. There are so many people in this room who can help one another out, that I hope this really is just the start of making more of what's going on already. I've alluded a number of times to us working with Nesta and Mozilla, and part of that work is trying to make visible some of the activities that are already taking place through Make Things Do Stuff, which you'll hear more of, I hope, as time develops. But it's really important we make these more apparent so young people can get inspired and engaged in these sorts of activities, whether that be in the classroom or at home with friends and others. But I think if we hold on to some of the key terms that we've heard about today, kind of dissatisfaction and the demand to change, the creativity, not just kind of learning about particular processes, but how all these different aspects come together, then there really is something very, very exciting we can all get behind. There's wine downstairs, and beer, and opportunity to keep on talking. So please do keep on talking. Before we head off, can I just say thank you to all of you for coming. Thank you to those who have tuned in online as well. And can I ask you all to say thanks to Julian for a fantastic report, and to the other panel members for their discussion today. Thank you.